You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. It's 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Glad you could be with us this afternoon. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have a question about diet, nutrition, give us a call. Talk to Susan. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area. 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She works with clients of all ages and athletes on enhancing health, fitness, and sports performance. She's also an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department. She's the consulting sports dietitian for Illini Athletics and leads nutrition and cooking classes at the new Division of Campus Recreation ARC building on the Champaign-Urbana campus of the University of Illinois. She's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and you'll find her online at www.nutritiononthemove.net and www.rkteamnutrition.net. Questions about diet and nutrition? Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Well, one of the things that you suggested we talk about this afternoon at the start, diet and eye health.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the basics?
Well, there has been some very interesting research that's come out on diet and eye health. And particularly, we get concerned about macular degeneration, which happens as we get older. And certainly, if there's any way we can prevent cataracts or at least decrease the risk and those kinds of things. So I wanted to highlight a recent study that came out not too long ago. Actually, a couple different studies that have been relatively recent that looked at the types of fats in the diet and how they might be helpful. And in one study, they reviewed people and their diets and then whether or not later on they got some eye problems, particularly the macular degeneration, and found that those people who ate higher amounts of omega-3 fatty acids, particularly if they had one or two servings of fish a week, they had about a 30% lower risk of having macular degeneration than those who did not eat the omega-3s in their diet. And I think it's particularly something to think about for those of us who live here in the Midwest or in areas mm-hmm. where you just might not have as much fresh fish available, how important it still is to eat tuna or salmon or particularly some of those foods that are a little bit higher in omega-3s once or twice a week anyway. We know the general recommendation from the American Heart Association is fish twice a week or 6 ounces a week is maybe preventive in terms of heart disease and very helpful. And finding other ways to get omega-3s too. There have been other studies that have looked at people who take in more walnuts, for example, or more almonds or getting more monounsaturated fats might have a lower risk of eye disease. So there really seems to be something, in the benefit of that. And then another study that was recently released looked at eating processed foods. And so people who tended to eat more processed foods that contained trans fat, which is more of this bad type of fat or the type of fat that is more saturated and is not good for us, tended to have a higher risk of eye disease.
Really?
Too. So not only is it important to eat the good fats, but it's also important to lay off the saturated fats or in particular, I guess we'd think about things like baked goods, for example, donuts or rolls or danishes or cakes and cookies and foods that are maybe made with fats that you have to have them somewhat hardened. And part of what's happening, researchers really believe, is that decreasing the inflammation in the body might be one thing that helps with the eye disease as well. We know that helps with cardiovascular disease risk reduction. And eating foods that may have an impact on inflammation, and certainly omega-3s mm-hmm. are fats that have been found to decrease inflammation in some people, and that's why it's important for heart disease and the inflammation of the arteries. But it may go much further than that. And the earlier someone starts eating well, the better. So that's one whole area looking at these types of fats. But certainly there have been a lot of studies looking at other particular nutrients and the decreased risk of the macular degeneration, and particularly nutrients like vitamin C, beta carotene, which we think of as vitamin A, but foods that might be those dark green, dark orange. You know, I tell people, if you want to do one thing to help yourself nutritionally, start eating kale, because kale, of course, is so high in natural antioxidants, and it's a food that's very high in beta carotene and has some of these other phytochemicals or nutrients that may have additional benefits. And so those, eating more of those types of foods can be really beneficial as well. So it really gets back to saying more fruits and vegetables, and also looking at trying to get orange and yellow and green, particularly vegetables, that may be even more beneficial for eye health.
Yeah. Through diet, is it possible to improve eye health? Let's say you're kind of worried that maybe your vision isn't as good as it used to be. By paying some attention to what you're eating, might you stave off further deterioration?
Well, I think that's a possibility when you think about maybe decreasing further deterioration. Yes, there seems to be some, you know, interest in saying, gosh, even starting now might help that not get any worse. The other question people ask me is, if you've already got problems, can you start eating mm-hmm. these foods and they get better? Well, we don't know that that's true.
Okay.
And so most of the studies have looked at what we'd call more epidemiological studies, where they've looked at actual diets, what people take in, and then what their risk of disease is. And so, for example, there was another study out a few years ago where they actually looked at vision in 4,500 people, and they were ages 60 to 80. So that would be the group where we'd maybe start seeing more age-related eye problems and degeneration. And they looked at the surveys of 90 different foods that they'd eaten in the last several years, and they also then looked to see, well, which particular food components or antioxidants, particular phytochemicals, were they taking in. And those with the highest intakes of foods rich in certain phytochemicals, lutein and zeaxanthin, which are basically just, again, particular phytochemicals or antioxidants found primarily in fruits and vegetables, not only in those foods, but primarily, were about 35% less likely than those with low intakes of those nutrients to have the age-related macular degeneration. So again, it's not saying these foods particularly are going to stop you from having it, but mm-hmm. your risk is reduced with that. And so that's important. So they note in this study, these foods would be spinach, kale, turnip greens, collards, mustard greens, squash, green peas, broccoli, pumpkin, and corn. Those were the foods that seemed to be the, you know, greatly related to a decreased risk of disease.
So we want to choose foods that are high in lutein and this other compound, zeaxanthin.
Right.
If I've got that correct. And this is a new one on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lutein, we're kind of familiar with. We think of lutein, we think of tomatoes immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and lutein itself, and lycopene is another one. And lycopene is another antioxidant that we think of mainly in these red pigments too. So we think of lycopene more related to tomatoes, and particularly tomato sauce and tomato paste and processed tomato foods, pizza sauce, things like that, and watermelon and those types of foods. But lutein is often found some in the yellow foods. So it's found in corn, for example, is high in lutein. And so it really gets back into saying that you want to vary your fruits and vegetables, and particularly with vegetables, any of these yellow, orange, green ones may have additional benefits because of these antioxidants.
So we should be drawn to color.
We should be extremely drawn to color.
Okay.
That's right.
Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition. If you've got a question, give us a call. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from a listener in Muhammad on line one. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask you how much vitamin A, which is my understanding that's good for your eyes. I have one that's 1,000 IU, international units.
Mm-hmm.
And is that good to take, and how much should I take?
Well, let me say one thing first about vitamin A. We really, at this point, we do not recommend supplementing with extra vitamin A. And the reason from a supplemental standpoint that that's the case is because there was a while where we thought extra vitamin A as an antioxidant probably could be helpful, and maybe it'll decrease the risk of cancer and decrease the risk of other disease states. But in reality, the studies that have looked at that have not found that to be the case. In other words, vitamin A in supplemental form, most of the studies found that as people increased vitamin A in supplements, they actually increased their risk of disease.
Ah.
And so...
So don't take it.
So generally, unless there's some other medical reason to be taking extra vitamin A, we really don't recommend that you do that. Now, one thing that I'll say is if, as far as vitamin A goes, if you're eating fruits and vegetables, and if you're taking a multivitamin, it may have some vitamin A in it.
I'm not eating fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
I have no eye disease. I'm 77. I don't even use reading glasses.
Oh.
But I'll tell you the one thing I've done my whole life, and that is wear sunglasses.
Well, there you go.
I wear them when in the winter with the snow. I wear them in the summer. I wear them almost around the clock. And my eyes are in very good condition. I don't have cataracts. I don't have macular degeneration. And I don't eat, I don't even know what kale is. I guess the black community likes kale. I've never, you know, I've never been introduced to it. You guys bring up these foods, and we don't even know what they are. We don't even know what, I don't even know what kale is. I don't eat lots of fruits and vegetables. I eat a lot of the microwave dinners, which most senior citizens do.
Right.
I try to watch my fat stuff. I try to eat healthy. I weigh 115 pounds. I'm 5'7". I've never been heavy. I exercise every day. But I don't know what to do as far as my eyes are concerned, because for years they said, take vitamin A, take vitamin A. Now you're saying don't take vitamin A. I mean, I wish you guys would make up your minds. You change about so many things. We don't know what to do.
Well, I will say that, you know, nutrition is a science that is definitely evolving. And so it can be confusing for people because there are new reports that come out and new things happen, which is also why it's very exciting. But it can be confusing that way. But definitely vitamin A, you know, for the last several years, I can't remember the year that these studies came out that were very surprising studies to most people when they found that extra vitamin A actually could potentially, you know, cause more of a problem. But, you know, vitamin A, let me get back to a couple of your questions. One of the things you asked about was kale. Well, kale is basically a dark leafy green. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be kale that you eat. It might be dark lettuce.
Is it a salad? Do you just eat it raw? Do you cook it? What?
Sure, you can eat it. You can eat it raw. I certainly eat it raw. I'll chop it up and put it in things. It's very commonly found in stir fries and a lot of Asian stir fries. And certainly people eat kale where they would just cut it up and cook it for long periods of time on the stove. And, of course, you know, you can add a little bit of fat to that, too. I wouldn't recommend adding a lot of bacon or things, but you could add, you could chop up a few slices of bacon and put it in there and put some onions in there and kind of cook it down. Another way you can actually make kale, one of the mothers that I've worked with in the PTA at my daughter's school makes kale, and she basically just takes the kale. You can buy it in any grocery store at the farmer's market. She takes it, she washes it, she just chops it up, and then she puts it on a pan, puts it in the oven, I think she said 400 degrees, maybe a little salt and pepper, and she just bakes it at 400 for about 20, 25 minutes, and it just gets a little bit crispy. And she said her kids all eat it. And I said, gosh, I could wish could get my daughter to eat more kale. I'm going to try it that way.
Yeah.
But so that's a real simple way to make it, too. But any dark leafy green that you look at in the store and it's darker green is great for you. And they're all going to have some of these antioxidants. So no matter what they are or what they're called, if you see that in the store or you see that at the farmer's market, then you would be doing well by your eyes. And those would naturally have a lot of vitamin A. I mean, if
How
we look
a
at...
Day?
The amount a day that we're really looking for is about, and I'll give it to you. There's many ways you can calculate how much this is. But
what?
Oh, well, if you had even a half a cup of kale a day, boy, you'd be in great shape.
Oh.
If we look at how much vitamin A, and again, we'll look at it in what we call these retinol equivalents, or there's many ways to look at it, but you sometimes will see it as IUs, international units, and
right.
generally around 3,000 IUs a day, 2,000 to 3,000. Huh. And if you look here, things like, well, let's say raw spinach for a cup of these equivalents has about 280, and this is actually another way to look at equivalents towards micrograms.
See, 280, when you need 1,000, that mm-hmm. means you'd have to eat so much spinach every day. It's unreal.
Right. Well, even one carrot has 1,000. So basically, you know, that's where we say if you get 2 or 3 servings of a green or orange vegetable or fruit, you'd be in great shape. It doesn't have to be a lot of food to get that in.
Yeah. Well, I eat a lot of broccoli because mm-hmm. I like broccoli.
Yeah, broccoli is a good source as well. Broccoli, when you look at broccoli from, you know, many, many studies on broccoli, it's beneficial to have broccoli in the diet. There's no question about it.
I eat a huge amount of tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I love tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. Tomatoes are very good.
I eat green peppers. I eat cucumbers. But none of these other, you know, avocados, kales, I mean, none of that did I grow up on. You know, and most seniors are in my spot. We didn't grow up on those foods.
I didn't either.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what they are. I don't know how yeah. you fix them. I don't know what you put them with. And so, you know, and to go to the farmer's market or a number of these other things you suggest, I can't afford that. Mm. You know, I'm living on Social Security, $570 a month, and I really have to watch my pennies, and I have to go with the cheap little microwave dinners, and that's all I get except canned vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a very reasonable way to get vitamin A naturally is, and usually I can find this really easily, is the frozen spinach. It's just frozen spinach in those blocks that you can get, that you can usually get the generic brand that's very reasonable. And I'll take that frozen spinach, and because that's so concentrated, even if you eat a quarter of that block of frozen spinach with your meal, say you make a frozen dinner and then you just pull out a little bit of that and microwave it, that would give you almost your whole needs for the day just because it's so concentrated. So, and that's very inexpensive. So there are ways to, you know, get what you need. Doesn't all have to be fresh by any means, but you could get some canned or some frozen, and that adds up too. That's really helpful.
Yeah. And also going back to the omega-3 fatty acids, canned fish works
sure.
Well as if you can't find the fresh fish. And as you mentioned, that can be a problem in our area,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes the frozen fish choices can be a little expensive, but
yeah.
Canned fish is a good alternative.
Canned fish is
but
great.
It sounds like this caller is doing really well. So
yeah,
just
actually,
keep on keeping on.
Right, actually.
Okay, well, let's say we'll take another call now. A listener in Bradley on line 4. Good afternoon.
Yes, I'm calling about my granddaughter. She's had a problem with constipation since she's been a toddler. She's 7 now. And she's taken at times herbal teas and Miralax and just loads of fiber along with liquid and sitting on the potty for 5 minutes. And I wondered about magnesium. I found such a difference when I took it with my calcium.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think the milk of magnesia, which is what that has in it
yeah.
too, is helpful for a lot of people, sometimes additional magnesium can be helpful. You know, so that's certainly a possibility to look at. And, you know, there might be other things going on medically, of course, but some other foods that sometimes help people when they've tried other things. I know I've had many clients who've found that they've seen some relief when they use ground flax seeds and add that in. And now for a 7-year-old, I would just put that in yogurt or
yeah.
on cottage cheese or in a smoothie or anything like that. I mean, it would be worth trying
yeah.
that as well. Usually the herbal teas that seem to work the best for people are teas with senna. Of course, senna is what's in Sennacot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they can be a little bit harsh, though, so you have to make sure you're not getting too much. But
well, could you, would a small dosage of magnesium be contraindicated? Or?
Well, I would check that with her pediatrician just
yeah.
to make sure that that's not a problem. But like you say, many calcium supplements have magnesium added to them as
yeah.
well. And so that would certainly be worth trying. too, to see if that's helpful. Some of the chewable calciums for kids also have magnesium in them.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, that might be...
be a dosage for a child of maximum?
Yeah, well, I don't know the maximum amount in this situation, but I would probably start with 50% of the RDA, which is usually a few, 100 milligrams or something like that. And generally, if it's in a calcium supplement, that's probably what it's going to be. Usually, if you have calcium, it's maybe a 2-to-1 ratio. And so that might be a good place, a good place to start. Just because anytime, especially with kids, you want to be, careful with how much you bring in.
Yeah.
Generally, around 300 milligrams is usually okay. So that might be around 100 or something, 150.
Okay.
So, but certainly that might be something to try too. I think the thing with constipation, everybody's different. Our bodies are all different and we all respond to different things.
Yeah.
So you may find something that really works for her by continuing to try things.
Well, yeah, that's what we're trying to do, I guess.
Mm-hmm, right.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Did you happen to mention those, or would this be appropriate, the things you stir into beverages? Benefiber?
Benefiber, right. No, that would be very appropriate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Because you can just stir that into a juice or something like that, and that may be helpful, too, if they have not already tried that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We don't have anyone waiting at the moment. Let me give folks the telephone numbers again and reintroduce the program. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month to talk about diet and nutrition, usually the first Monday of the month. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, if you've got questions about diet, nutrition, give us a call and talk to Susan. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. No one waiting at the moment. Back to eye health. You brought this month's handout. It is called... Mm-hmm. Eating for Healthy Eyes. And so, listeners, if you'd like to get a copy of Susan's paper on eating for healthy eyes, you can send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, 61801.
I wanted to mention... just a quick recipe and something that I make a lot in the summer. I just made it last week, and this might be something that listeners would be interested in. We're always looking at ways to eat more fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. right? A review came out recently that said, according to the food guide pyramid, our recommendation of 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, which is still really not enough, but it's a good start, that only about 20% of men and maybe 25% of women in the U.S. are achieving that goal. So we're still really way low on our produce intake. So part of it is finding easy ways to just eat it and make sure that it's simple. So here's a recipe that I use at home, and it's very simple, very easy. It stays in your fridge 3 or 4 days. And if you just mixed up a cup of chopped broccoli, and these would be fresh, a cup of chopped cauliflower, a cup of corn. You can use canned corn, not cream, but just regular corn niblets. A cup of chopped green pepper, which is usually just one big green pepper. Half a cup of chopped red onion. And just add on whatever little bit of dressing you like. I like to use a little light ranch on that, actually. And you mix it all up and just keep it in a container. Mm-hmm. And so you have all the benefit from your cruciferous vegetables, from broccoli and cauliflower. You have the corn, which gives more of that lutein. As well, and you have the red or green pepper or orange pepper, which is going to give more of the antioxidants. You have some red onion, which is good. So you've got, and it's really tasty salad, and it's just sort of a different way to eat all those vegetables. And so that might be worth some people, thinking about, I could add that all together, add a little bit of dressing to that. You could certainly make your own oil and vinegar or something, but for some reason, ranch works really well on that. And then sometimes what I'll do, too, if I'm going to serve it within, probably eat it all within a day or 2 days, is I'll put in sunflower seeds in that, too. Mm. They get soggy after a while, but if you're just going to eat it relatively soon, then you've got the extra vitamin E. You've got a little monounsaturated fat that you've added to that too. And that's a great summer salad that is a different way to eat all these extra vegetables.
Okay, let's take another call now. A listener on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to reply to that lady who had the granddaughter with a sort of chronic constipation. And I was just thinking, if she's raised on a typical Midwestern diet with white bread and all that stuff, for a kid, if I had a kid with that problem, I'd fix them some bran muffins once in a while. One of those a day will cure that problem, unless there's something else going on. And that, those fibars, F-I-B-A-R, you know, they have a lot of fiber in them. And a kid would eat that up like crazy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, those are good points, because part of it is, like you mentioned, just increasing the overall, particularly insoluble fiber, or those whole grain fiber that you're talking about with bran and bran muffins and things. You know, occasionally there'll be people who boost the fiber and boost the fluids, and for whatever reason it doesn't help like you'd think it would help. But those are great, great options too. And I think with the bars, there are just so many good bars that taste better than we ever had before too. So kids tend to eat those better now as well. So that's great.
True. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call this afternoon. Does exercise play a role as well?
Sure. It plays a big role. You know, exercise, even kids, you know, there have been a lot of kids in all ages where if they learn how to even do some basic yoga moves, that can be helpful with intestinal. Sure, because if you're, you know, part of what's happening is if you're learning to move your gut in ways that can help move through, that's helpful. And if you strengthen your core, then that also strengthens your intestines too, which can be very helpful. So, and of course, just jarring exercise like walking or running or doing things where you're moving your body and jarring up and down can be really helpful for keeping people regular. The other thing we didn't really touch on a lot, but many people, we don't tend to drink a lot of warm liquids, especially during the summer, and kids often don't. But even warming up juice and things, sometimes just that warm liquid in the gut can trigger it to sort of move the food through. Mm. So just remembering that, don't drink everything cold, but if there's anything you could warm, or even have a cup of warm tea and warm milk and those kinds of things, can sometimes get the intestinal system to get moving a little better.
Apple cider?
Apple cider. Yeah, that sounds good.
It does sound good, even though it's warm out there today. 89 degrees now.
Wow.
In Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Let's go to Georgetown next. A listener on line four. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I have beginning stages of osteoarthritis, take Fosamax, and also a calcium supplement. And someone told me the other day that your calcium is absorbed better if it is not taken with a meal, and I always have taken it with my meal. So do you have any information on that?
Well, generally with calcium, we don't worry as much about that if you take that with a meal as we do things like iron. Iron, we know generally if you have it between meals, it's better absorbed if your stomach can handle that. I don't worry so much about the calcium. You know, it may be a little better absorbed between, but that's probably not a big problem. The main thing we know with calcium is that it's going to be best absorbed if you don't have too much at one time. And so sometimes people will take 1,000 milligrams at a time or something, or take two calciums at one time so they don't forget. And just the more you have at one time, the lower percentage of it will be absorbed. And so it's always best to break that down. So if you're, you know, if you're taking 600 milligrams, I'd take 300 twice a day instead of that 600 together even.
Okay.
And so that's probably the most important thing. But I've not run into cases, you know, as common as, you know, taking calcium between meals as with the iron, because we've seen that seems to have a bigger difference. But there may be something to that, and it might help a little bit more. Certainly you could try it. Some of it ends up being if you can remember that, and if we're trying to eat meals and the snacks and getting things between can be kind of challenging. But I would definitely look at how much you're taking, and if you can break that apart at all, I would do that for sure.
Okay. With my the supplement, in order to get the 800 milligrams, I think right now it depends on what supplement I buy, but this one I have to take four a day. So it would probably be better if I took one, say, at each meal and in between, mm-hmm. and instead of taking two at a time, just to break that up then.
Sure, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited, 333-9455, toll-free 800-9455. 1-800-222-9455. Maybe this would be a good time to review vitamin D.
Yes, well, vitamin D, the recommendations continue to change, and a lot of people feel we should have 1,000 IUs of vitamin D a day. Vitamin D, because it does help you also absorb the calcium, is important, and most supplements will have vitamin D in there as well as the calcium. It seems like almost every study that comes out and every review on vitamin D says that we're not getting enough.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, we look at 400 IU as being kind of the recommendation, then many, many researchers are saying 1,000 IU or more. And the biggest thing with vitamin D is that if you haven't had your vitamin D levels tested, you really should have them tested. And that, again, your physician or your primary care provider can coordinate that, and you can get those levels tested in the blood. And that is, that's absolutely what people should be doing, I think, because there's no way to know if your D levels are low unless you get them tested. And then 1,000 IUs of a supplement may not be nearly enough. You may need considerably more than that for a period to get your levels up. And vitamin D now has been linked to, you know, decreased risk of a lot of things, everything from, you know, colon cancer perhaps playing a role in that. And, of course, we know that it's important for bone health and things as well. So that would be the first step, is to get those levels tested. And I think we've mentioned before on the show that because we live where we live, we don't get real good sunlight for many months of the year. So, of course, we're coming into that again, which is good. But certainly during the winter, the sun's not strong enough, and we can't get enough D through the sun to make D from the sun. So I think that's an important thing to check.
Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign. Good afternoon. Line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. They recommend, you know, the fish and the omega-3. I'm allergic to all shellfish, all fish, anything that comes from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Help.
Yeah. Well, we need to find some other sources. There certainly are other sources of omega-3s. Now, they're not necessarily exactly the same as what you get from fish, but one thing we think of is flax, and particularly flax oil, which has some omega-3 fats. The other food that always comes to mind is walnuts, because walnuts, way above any other nuts, are much higher in omega-3 fats.
Okay.
And so you may want to consider, if you're not eating any fish or getting, you know, omega-3s in places like that, it might be worth adding a supplement of flax oil, or even looking at adding a couple tablespoons of ground flax. The ground flax itself has other things. It has the fibers and other things in it, but it also has the fat. So it's not nearly as concentrated as the flax oil supplement that you would get, but it's still going to be a really good dose if you add a couple tablespoons of ground flax a day.
Okay.
So that would be a good place to start, and then maybe you have a handful of walnuts every day, and boy, you'd have two fairly good sources, even though you're not eating fish.
Okay. And how much a handful of walnuts would do it, or a handful of...
Yeah, about a quarter cup really is considered a serving of nuts. And it's about 200 calories or so, and that's a good amount of omega-3s. But I would probably think, you know, most of us, again, probably don't get enough omega-3s. And so if you didn't mind using the ground flax, that's the most natural way to use it. So you could certainly put that in muffins, as one of our listeners mentioned, bran muffins. You could add that to it, or you could mix that in anything where it mixes easily. So some people take it in juice, but I think it mixes well in yogurt and cottage cheese and things like that. So you could add that a tablespoon or two as well. And that would be great.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Next, we go to Danville, a listener on line two. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Pretty good. I am just exhausted all the time. I have no idea what to do. I do work like more than 40 hours at a time, you know, sometimes. But when I go home and when I'm off like for 2 days in a row or something, all I do is just lie around and just watch TV. I have no idea what I should be doing. I'm just exhausted all the time. I have no energy to do anything in the house with my family. I just don't know what to do.
How's your diet?
Pretty bad. I'm sitting in my car, just had Chinese food.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's a few things that, a lot of things can affect energy. There's no question about it. And stress can affect energy as well as everything else. But a few things you might want to think of as a checklist. One would be, I would certainly, if you haven't already, again, you know, get to your primary care physician and just talk about this issue. Sometimes there are people who just have low stores of certain nutrients that affect energy. One that comes to mind right away is iron. For example, it's not that common for adult males to be low in iron, but it certainly does happen. And if your iron is low, then that affects your energy because that means you can't carry oxygen in your red blood cells as well as you should. And so you may feel tired all the time. So the first thing I always think of when somebody says they're tired all the time is nutritionally could be iron or related to some type of anemia or something. So I would definitely check that out. From a nutrition standpoint, the thing we know is that if you get fuel more times during the day and if it's pretty quality fuel, that can certainly help energy. So you want to make sure you have a good breakfast and then you're eating every 3 or 4 hours during the day so you have consistent fuel in your body. And so that's one thing I would definitely start doing. Another thing is looking at hydration, because sometimes people who are chronically dehydrated just don't have much energy because the body doesn't work very well when you're dehydrated.
I drink soda at work. I'm a pharmacist, so I drink soda all day long. I don't know. That might be the cause. I'm not sure, but that might be the cause. I have no idea, but that's all I do. I mean, I drink coffee in the morning, then I drink Diet Pepsi all day long until I get out from pharmacy. I'm a pharmacist. I do have a high stress level at work, but my ferritin level was low when I went to my doctor last year, so that might be one thing I need to look at.
Right. Ferritin, which is one of the storage form of iron, if that's low, it's very common to feel like you're low energy. So if your ferritin is low, I'm sure they probably put you on iron supplements as well as increasing the iron in your diet.
Yeah, I only took it for a few days and I stopped taking it. That might be the cause. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought about it, but I'm like, I just have absolutely no energy. Maybe I was thinking about getting B6 and B12 shots. Do you think that would help? I don't know if you have heard anything about that.
Well, the only reason you would need those is if those stores are low, too. Now, certainly if B12 is low, that can affect certain types of anemia. But if ferritin is low, then the only way you'll feel better there is to get your ferritin stores up, which, again, if ferritin is low as that storage form of iron, then most people need the supplement as well as boosting iron in the diet. Things like red meat, iron-fortified foods, spinach,
Fortified cereals,
right. And making sure that those iron levels get high enough that your body can then utilize the oxygen. The other thing that might be an issue is caffeine. Sometimes people who chronically use a lot of caffeine during the day, then they get off the caffeine at night, and of course they need you to sleep, but then you won't have this central nervous system stimulant coming in, and then people feel very tired. So I would certainly encourage you to try to cut down on the caffeine during the day and try to eat more regular food and get your energy from food, instead of the caffeine, and get more water in so you can actually stay better hydrated. And those things certainly might help too. But I'd have that ferritin checked again, because you could do everything in the world, but if that's still low, you won't feel good.
I thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. I wonder why you stopped taking the supplement that his doctor recommended.
Yeah, well, sometimes people stop taking it if it gives you a stomach ache or, sometimes you can get constipated on iron, and often you can try a different formula and that may be helpful too. Or, sometimes people just aren't used to taking something. It's hard to keep taking it. But there are certain stores in the body, when they get low, and iron is one of them. When iron gets low, most people, if it gets low enough, they're not going to feel good because the iron just has to be there to help transport the oxygen so you can use the oxygen and feel like you have energy. And it's not uncommon, especially if iron is low, that people will feel very low energy upon exertion. In other words, they might feel okay during the day, but once they try to do something, they're just exhausted. Or an athlete might train okay if it's regular training, but once they go bump their training up, they can't do it because the body can't take in that extra oxygen and use it without the iron stores being high.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move is with us this afternoon. Listeners, if you've got a question that Susan can help with, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I think if I was feeling as bad as that guy seems to be feeling, I might keep a food record, and then I might seek out a dietitian. Mm-hmm. How does somebody find a dietitian? He's in Danville.
Yeah, well, in Danville, I would call the local hospitals, or there's certainly dietitians at the VA, and if you're not with the VA, they could tell you where. But the local hospitals generally have dietitians. Or an easy way to find if you're online is you can go through the American Dietetic Association. And so if you're online, you could go to the website Eat Right. It's all together, EATRIGHT.org. And then there's a little place on there on the website that says find a dietitian. And so you can plug in your zip code, and you can find who's in your area. You can also plug in what specialty area you're looking at. I end up having a lot of people come to work with me. They found me that way. They found me through online searches for different areas and what area do you work in terms of specialty. So he could definitely find a dietitian that way. And hopefully whoever his primary care provider is would be working with dietitians as well and be able to refer him to one. But that would definitely be helpful. It sounds like from a diet standpoint, you know, I always feel like you want to cover your bases. So covering your bases means eating consistently, making sure you have quality food, no matter if it's fresh or frozen, however you have to get it. You can eat well on any budget, really. And making sure you're hydrated, make sure you're getting enough rest, and making sure you're getting some activity if you can in the day. And those are kind of the bases when we think about energy, because mm-hmm. all that needs to be part of your daily schedule. And then, of course, if you're real low in energy, sometimes you just need lab work. You need to find out, oh, is there something else going on here? He mentioned B12, which we kind of think of the B vitamins as energy vitamins. Mm-hmm. Well, they are. They serve as cofactors in the body, meaning that, you know, when you take in food, they help you use that food. They help you use energy. And if those stores are low, that can cause some problems. There's been a lot of interest in B12 the last year or so. I've read a ton more about B12. Partly because as we get older, our bodies don't store it as well. We don't use it as well, and we can't digest it as well. And so B12 does affect energy in some ways. And for so many people, we say supplement after age 50 for B12. It's either have it in a multivitamin or maybe get it in an additional supplement just because the body can't utilize it well.
And real quickly, Susan, two, three sources of the B complex in foods.
Mm-hmm. Well, B12 in particular in all animal foods. So if you're eating animal foods, particularly meats and things like that, you're getting it. But in general, whole grains, beans, and peas, those things are really good sources. And generally, meats have some. And those are all good sources of B vitamins. B vitamins are in a lot of different grain-type foods in general and some fruits and vegetables. But if you're eating pretty balanced, usually your Bs are pretty well covered. But again, then it doesn't hurt to take a multivitamin that has 100%, that's for sure. But there's no indication if the diet is not good, you could take all the B6 in the world and it's not going to give you energy.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Last one this afternoon. Lafayette, Indiana, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions about multivitamin supplements. I take one that's meant for senior citizens. And you had said that one shouldn't have vitamin A in supplements. Is that a problem when it comes in a multivitamin pill?
Well, it's not necessarily a problem. Most of the supplements may have 50% vitamin A, or they might be in the form of beta carotene, which is a little bit different, which is okay to have in a supplemental form. It's more natural form. So that's not a problem. If it becomes a large amount, if it's over 100% of the recommended amount, I probably wouldn't take that supplement if it's got more than 100 of vitamin A.
Okay. The other question is, why do they omit iron?
Well,
supplements for seniors.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. As we get older, most people don't need extra iron. You know, women stop menstruating, they don't lose it, so they don't need extra iron. Generally, men are not low enough in iron that it's a problem. And there have been some, you know, concerns that if you get too much iron, then that may cause other problems, maybe related to heart disease and things and inflammation. And so you never want to supplement with iron unless you need it. That's why it's in women's formula up to when we think most women are still menstruating. But after that, it's not put in those formulas or in the male formulas, because generally that would only be if someone was low in iron that they would need it.
Is there any reason why a person who's in their 70s and 80s should not take a regular non-senior citizen supplement?
I would say that iron issue would be one, because, again, you don't really need the extra iron. Unless your body is low in it. And so that's why there wouldn't be a real good reason to take one with iron.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good questions.
You're very welcome. And I think that those age-related multivitamins, I think they put things in there that are, we started off talking about healthy eyes. Here mm-hmm. we can wrap up that contain lutein, lycopene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes those are added to them. Whether or not they're as helpful in a supplement form
yeah.
as in food, we don't know, but often there are some extra things that might be more beneficial, right?
Okay. Well, happy summer to everyone, and the bounty of Mother Nature will be on our tables big time
That's
in
right.
the weeks ahead. So eat well, stay healthy, and we'll talk with Susan again in July.
Wow.
How about that? Mm-hmm. Licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move.